Chapter 48. Kazim entered Massard's office at 11 o'clock in the evening. He helped himself to a gin on the rocks and sat down in a chair before Massard bothered to look up and acknowledge the general's presence. "I was informed of your unexpected arrival, Zateb," said Massard. "What brings you to Fort Faroe this time of night?" Kazim studied his drink as he swirled the ice cubes. "I thought it best I'd tell you in person."
"Tell me what?" Massard inquired impatiently.
"Tabeza has been raided."
Massard frowned. "What are you talking about?"
"About 9 o'clock, my communication section received an emergency alert from the mine's security system," explained Kazim. "A few minutes later, the Tabeza radio operator announced an all-clear, saying the alarm went off due to a faulty electrical circuit."
"Sounds innocent enough."
"Only on the surface. I do not trust seemingly innocent situations. I ordered one of my Air Force fighters to make a reconnaissance flight over the area. The pilot radioed that an unidentified jet transport plane was sitting on Tabeza's airstrip. The same type of French Airbus, I might add, that snatched the American from the Gao airport."
Massard's face turned sober with sudden concern.
"Your pilot was positive of this?"
Kazim nodded.
"Since no aircraft can land at Tabeza without my authority, I ordered my pilot to destroy it. He acknowledged and launched his attack. He reported a hit on the target in almost the same instant his radio went dead."
"Good God, man, it could have been a commercial airliner that simply made an emergency landing."
"Commercial airliners do not fly the skies without markings."
"I think you're overreacting."
"Then explain why my pilot did not return to his base."
"Mechanical malfunction," Massard shrugged.
"He could have suffered any number of problems." "I prefer to believe he was shot down by the force that raided the mines."
"You don't know that?"
"Nonetheless, I've ordered a fighter squadron over the area and sent in an elite security force by helicopter to check out the situation."
"What of O'Banion?" asked Massard. "Hasn't he contacted you?"
"No response, nothing. 40 minutes after they denied an emergency, all communication with Tabeza went silent."
Massard mulled over Kazim's report, but was lost for answers.
"Why raid the mines?" he asked finally. "For what purpose?"
"Most likely the gold," Kazim replied.
"Stupid to steal ore. We remove all pure gold to our South Pacific depository as soon as it's processed. The last shipment was 2 days ago. A band of thieves with half a brain between them would attempt to hijack it during transport."
"For the moment, I have no theories," Kazim confessed. He held up his watch.
"My forces should be landing on the plateau above the mines about now. We'll have answers within the hour."
"If what you say is true, something strange is happening," Massard murmured.
"We have to consider the possibility that the same United Nations commando team that struck my Air Force base in Gao is responsible for the raid on Tabeza."
"Gao was a different operation. Why return and strike Tabeza? Under whose orders?"
Kazim finished off his gin and poured another.
"Hala Kamil?"
"Perhaps word leaked out about the abduction of Dr. Hopper and his party. So she sent in her tactical team to rescue them."
"Impossible," said Massard, shaking his head. "Unless your men talked."
"My men know they would die if they betrayed my trust," Kazim said coldly. "If there was a leak, it came from your end."
Massard gave Kazim a benign stare.
"Stupid of us to argue. We can't alter the past, but we can control the future."
"In what way?"
"You said your pilot claimed a hit on the airliner."
"His final words."
"Then we can assume the raiding party's only means of escape from Mali has been eliminated,
providing damage to their aircraft was severe enough."
Massard rose and turned to face a large plaster contour map of the Sahara that stretched on the wall behind his desk.
"If you were in command of the raiders and your plane was destroyed, how would you see the situation?"
"All but hopeless."
"What are your options?"
Kazim came over and tapped his glass against the plaster map.
"There are no options but one, cut and run for the Algerian border."
"Can they make it?" asked Massard.
"Assuming their vehicles are intact and fueled, they should be able to cross over into Algeria sometime around dawn."
Massard looked at him.
Can you catch and destroy them before they reach the border? Our night fighting systems are limited. I might shave them down a bit, but to wipe them out I would need daylight.
Then you will be too late. Kazim took a cigar from a ceramic humidor, lit it, and sipped from his gin.
Let us be practical. We're looking at the Tanis Ruft, the most desolate and remote part of the Sahara. The Algerian military rarely sends a patrol into the uninhabited region along the border, and why should they? They have no quarrel with Mali, and we have none with them. My security forces can easily strike 100 miles inside our northern neighbor without detection.
Massard looked sharply at Kazim.
Should it turn out to be a rescue mission by the UN forces, none of Hopper's people or my engineers and their families can be allowed to escape. If only one gets through to expose Fort Fourreau or Tabeza, you and I are finished as business partners.
The beginnings of a smile widened across the general's face.
Not to worry yourself, Eve, my friend. We have too good a thing going to allow a few prying Samaritans to pull the rug from under us. I promise you that by tomorrow, at noon, they will all be carrion for the vultures, every last one of them.
After Kazim had left, Massard spoke briefly into his intercom. A few seconds later, Ismail Yerli entered the room.
You heard and observed on the monitor? Asked Massard.
Yerli nodded.
Amazing, the man can be so cunning and yet so stupid at the same time.
You read Kazim quite accurately. You can see you won't have an easy time keeping a leash on him.
When does he expect me to join his entourage?
I'll introduce you this evening at a dinner party I'm hosting in honor of President Ahir.
With the situation at the Beza in a critical stage, isn't Kazim too occupied to show?
Massard smiled.
The great lion of Mali is never too busy to attend an elegant dinner put on by a Frenchman.
Sitting in his small command center office in the UN building in New York, General Bach read the report relayed by a United Nations communication satellite by Colonel Avant. There was a grave expression on his aging face as he picked up a secure phone and called Admiral Sandecker's private number. The Admiral's answering machine beeped, and Bach left a terse message. Sandecker was back to him within 8 minutes.
I've just received an unpleasant report from Colonel Avant, Bach announced.
What's the situation? Sandecker asked flatly.
Aircraft of the Malian Air Force destroyed their transport plane on the ground. They are cut off and trapped.
What of the rescue operation at the mine?
It went off as planned. All foreign nationals still alive were placed under medical care and evacuated. Levant reported his casualties as light.
Are they currently under attack?
Not as yet, but it is only a matter of hours before forces of General Kazim close in.
Do they have an optional escape route?
The colonel was quite clear in stating their only hope lay in reaching the Algerian border before daylight.
Not much of a choice, Sandecker said grimly.
I suspect it was a red herring.
Why do you say that?
He sent his report over an open frequency. Kazim's communications operators were sure to pick it up.
Sandecker paused to take notes.
You think Colonel Avant is heading on a different tack than he advertised?
I was hoping you'd tell me, said Bach.
Clairvoyance is not one of my strong points.
There was a message to you in Levant's report from your man Pitt.
Dirk.
There was sudden warmth in Sandecker's voice and a touch of reverence. Leave it to Pitt to come up with an unthinkable scheme.
What is the message?
It reads, tell the Admiral that when I return to Washington, I'll take him to see Harvey's girlfriend Judy sing at the AT&S Saloon. Is this a crude joke or what?
Dirk is not known for crude jokes, Sandecker said definitely. He's trying to tell us something with some sort of riddle.
Do you know this, Harvey? Asked Bach blankly.
The name isn't familiar, murmured Sandecker. I've never heard Dirk mention anyone called Harvey.
Is there such a place in Washington as the AT&S Saloon with a singer by the name of Judy? Bach inquired.
Not that I've ever been in, Sandecker answered, searching for a clue in the recesses of his mind.
And the only singer I ever knew named Judy was...
The answer struck Sandecker with all the suddenness of a slap in the face.
The ingenious simplicity, the elementary code, was obvious to anyone who was an old motion picture buff like the Admiral. He might have known, he might have guessed Pitt would have played on that knowledge. He laughed.
"I fail to see the humor," Bach said sternly.
"They're not running for the border into Algeria," Sandecker stated triumphantly.
"What did you say?"
"Colonel Avant's force is heading south toward the railroad running between the sea and Fort Fourreau."
"May I ask what brought you to that conclusion?" Bach asked suspiciously.
"Dirk's thrown us a conundrum, a common riddle that Kazim is unlikely to solve. Judy the singer is Judy Garland, and Harvey represents a movie she starred in called The Harvey Girls. How does the AT&S saloon fit in the picture?" "Not a saloon, but a song. The hit song Judy Garland sang in the movie. It was called The Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe, the name of a railroad."
Bach said slowly, "That explains why Levant sent a report that Kazim's communications people could easily intercept. He misled them into believing he was heading north into Algeria." "When in fact they're traveling in the opposite direction," Sandecker finished. "Levant has rightly assumed that crossing the Mali-Algeria border did not guarantee safety. Men as ruthless as Kazim have no qualms about ignoring international law. He will pursue our force until they are all slaughtered. The next question is, what do they do after reaching the railroad?"
"Perhaps steal a train," suggested Bach.
"Makes sense, but in broad daylight?"
"There is more to the message from your man Pitt.
Please go on."
"The next part reads, also inform the Admiral that Gary, Ray, and Bob are going over to Brian's house for fun and games."
"Can you interpret this?"
Sandecker thought a moment. "If Pitt is still coding in movies, then Gary must be Gary Cooper, and I'll guess that he means Ray Milland."
"Do you recall a picture they starred in together?"
"I do indeed," Sandecker fairly beamed over the telephone. "Dirk might just as well have hung out a neon sign. They starred with Robert Preston and Brian Donlevy in a 1939 epic called Beaugest."
"I saw it when I was a boy," said Bach. "The story was about three brothers who served in the French Foreign Legion."
"The reference to Brian's house suggests a fort."
"Certainly not the Fort Fourreau hazardous waste facility. That would be the last place Levant would go."
"Is there another fort in the area?"
Bach paused to consult his maps. "Yes, an old Legion outpost several kilometers west of the waste project. The very one, in fact, Massard named his project after."
"Sounds like they intend to hole up there until dark."
"I would do the same if I was in Colonel Levant's place."
"They're going to need help," said Sandecker.
"Precisely the reason for my call to you," said Bach, becoming brisk and businesslike. "You must persuade the President to send an American Special Forces group to assist in bringing Levant and the freed captives out of General Kazim's territory."
"Did you discuss this with Secretary General Camille? She carries more weight with the President than I do."
"Unfortunately, she was suddenly called away to an emergency conference in Moscow. You are the only one I can turn to on rush notice."
"How much time have we got?"
"Virtually none. Daylight will come in their part of the desert within 2 hours."
"I'll do what I can," promised Sandecker. "I only hope the President hasn't gone to bed yet, or I'll pay hell getting his aides to wake him."